Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. At the time we're recording this show, the carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere are 424.75 parts per million. That's essentially 425 parts per million. 425 parts per million of carbon dioxide is way above the 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide scientists tell us is safe. So that's just a fact. On top of that, there are only 2,097 days left until the year 2030, by which time we have to cut our carbon dioxide emissions in half in order to address that high carbon dioxide level. So our work's cut out for us. One of the ways to cut our carbon dioxide emissions is by thinking about our residences. And for the last few episodes, we have been thinking about a concept called decarbonization, which I've said in the past is a very fancy word for trying to get the fossil fuel and carbon dioxide, fossil fuels out of your house. Typically, that means how you warm your home or where you live, how you cook your meals, how you dry your clothes, right? All that's natural gas. You want to get rid of it, and that's decarbonization. Of course, getting rid of that natural gas from your home takes some thought and effort. And I keep saying getting rid of it, getting the stuff out of your home, as if you own your own home and have the ability to do anything about it. But there's a lot of people in the state of Massachusetts who are renters. And of course, as a renter, I remember long ago being a renter, and basically you pay your money each month and the landlord lets you continue to live there and you don't have many other options about what to do, right? So the question comes as to how does someone who's a renter here in Massachusetts, where a lot of our carbon dioxide pollution comes from buildings that people live in, right? How would renters approach the idea of decarbonizing? And I tell you, no surprise, it's a challenge. It's hard to do. And so in order to learn more about that, we are fortunate to be talking to an honest-to-God renter, not only a renter from Massachusetts, but a renter who is a climate activist, who knows her way around, who's committed to the work, knows what's up. And so I'm happy to have with us Marissa, who is a volunteer, an important volunteer, does a lot of important things for a group here in Franklin, Massachusetts called Energize Franklin, which maintains a website to help people learn how to do things to reduce their carbon footprints. But Marissa, welcome to the Climate Minute. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing well.
That's great. That's great. So I described you as a renter. Let me play Perry Mason for a minute. Are you a renter? Do you, in fact, rent the place that you live in?
I do, yes.
Okay. So, and you are, in fact, conscious of the problems we have with reducing our carbon dioxide emissions generally, right? You're aware of that.
I am indeed, yes.
So tell me, what's from the perspective of your own living arrangement, what's your take on trying to decarbonize? What have you thought about? What have you seen? What's the challenges you faced and what successes have you had?
I think similar to maybe the folks who do own their own homes, sometimes a lot of the challenges are knowing where you can start. You know, I think that's a stumbling block for a lot of us. And a lot of things about the potential options I learned while doing research for Energize Franklin when we were helping start things up, there was a lot of stuff I wasn't aware was available to renters, but it comes with the additional hurdle of you don't own the property that you are staying in. And a lot of it does still hinge on someone else being the final decision maker. And if it's a building with more than one, you know, rental unit, that adds even more layers of complication. So
And that's because to decarbonize, say, your heating system, the landlord basically has to pony up the money to change the probably natural gas heater to a heat pump, right? I mean, that's...
Absolutely. And while there are programs through MassSave, you can still get like an energy audit as a renter through MassSave. But any sort of substantial changes to your building for heating systems or even things like insulation are going to require your landlord to be the person to make the choices. And there are still programs and initiatives for landlords within MassSave, depending, and so those vary depending upon like how many units are in your building, et cetera. But it still relies on them being willing to make that investment and make that changeover.
Right.
Most substantial things.
No, I agree completely. And I think that with the question for the state is how to provide the incentive to the landlords to take those actions, because in this situation, the renters don't have a lot of say in changing the heating system of the place they're renting, right? That's just so tell me, given that constraint, right, the fact that you can't go down to the basement and swap out the hot water heater for a better one, are there things that is possible to do? Have you thought about things that you do have control of? So let me reverse the question. What things do you think a renter has control of in terms of decarbonizing their living?
In general? Well, I do think that there are some smaller scale practices and day-to-day habits that might not make a huge difference overall, because you know a lot of these things are the broader scale, but being more energy efficient is possible within some of your own choices, whether it's making sure that a lot of your electronics are things that are like constantly plugged in, like say TV or like video game equipment or things like that, if it all goes on one smart, power stroke kind of thing, you can easily, turn on and off that sort of thing to help reduce your electrical usage, which ultimately would help reduce your carbon footprint.
Mm-hmm.
For places like Franklin, if you've got, municipal aggregation, your level of electrical, how green your electricity is, right? You could maybe, depending on your program or plan, opt in to a plan that is greener. It might cost a little bit more money depending upon, what the rate is within your program. But you could also do things like, I think of one of my previous apartments, the biggest issue, we had electric heat, but the biggest issue that we found was there was a sort of drastic fluctuation in that bill during the wintertime. And a lot of it we could tell was, we were an upper floor unit. We should have theoretically been receiving heat from below us as well. We didn't necessarily set the thermostat much above 64, 65. Mm-hmm. We weren't setting it at anything crazy, but the bill was several hundred dollars a month at times, and very not insignificant. And one of the things that we noticed was that the windows in the unit, if it was windy, especially, you could even see the cellular shades in our unit shift with the wind. So
really?
We could tell we were losing heat.
Marty, that gives me chills just thinking about it.
We were losing heat through the windows, and because of the building, and because our landlord was just one person in a building full of many different units with potentially many different landlords, or some people who might have even owned theirs outright. It was unlikely that even though we had a decent rapport with our landlord, we were not gonna be able to get them to make that kind of a change.
Which would be that you mean come in and put in new windows that were secure.
Committing to putting
leaking
in new energy efficient windows. I fully believe that those ones have been installed when the building was built in the 80s and probably had never been changed out.
Right.
But what we ended up doing for especially a couple of winters, you know, after the first one, we were like, oh my goodness, what's going on, is making our thermal envelope better installing that plastic seals over the windows during the wintertime. You know, it wasn't necessarily an all year round commitment, but it did help and reduce our bills when we did that.
That's something you would go to Home Depot and buy a little kit, and then you tape it up and use a hairdryer to tighten it up, kind of thing, right?
Yes, exactly that. You know, go, you get a kit, you know, I forget how much it costs at the time, but I think had to get, because of how big the windows were, the style of them, they weren't sort of your standard size. I think we had to get a kit designed for that specifically. But, you know, it was a big plastic sheet functionally, and you taped it up and used the hairdryer to seal it around. And eventually, you know, a couple months later, we would, when things started to warm up, we would take it down.
And is it fair to say that the investment of is probably $20 in this thing saved you more than that in the heating, right? And so,
oh, for sure. Yeah.
And so I guess I'm just wondering from the renter point of view, let me just say, you tell me if I'm crazy. I mean, one thing, if you're renting, one thing to do is just be aware that you do have choices, and that it's not all on the landlord. I don't want to say this. I mean, I remember being young and having renting, and like, you didn't really care. Right. What they caught, you know, if you were running stuff, you weren't paying attention. As they say, nothing parties like a rental. Right. I mean, you're not committed financially to the building, and so you don't care as much. But in your case, and I think once you begin to realize it, you are probably paying for the utilities. And to the extent you can save the utilities, that's probably cleaner. And so the small investments they're not small. I mean, relatively small investments to put up some insulation in the wintertime would help you, right?
Yes. And you're right. It did sort of involve, it was a two-person job to sort of do this and set this up. And I had a roommate at the time, so it was, you know, functionally very possible. And I think it was one of the first times maybe as a renter that I could see my energy consumption in my electric bill as sort of a representation of the energy efficiency of where I lived. You know, I, growing up, had been sort of insulated from that. It was something I'm sure my parents thought about. But, you know, in college, I don't think it was something I considered. I am pretty sure the apartment I had in college had utilities included. In the price. So it wasn't something I was thinking about most of the time at all there. And it was sort of the first moment where it became readily apparent that there was a direct correlation in that moment between what something cost me and the energy efficiency and, you know, functionality of where I lived.
I mean, that's a great take-home lesson, as you say. I mean, until you think about it, the penny doesn't drop, right? And all, but when you start wondering about these things, then it begins to make more sense. And so as a renter, that interesting consciousness begins to build, right? You've got this big electric bill. I suppose you can do it the same, right? You can keep the heating temperature down a little bit.
And in some ways, even that might not be super possible to control. My current place that I live has a thermostat on the wall, but it's behind a locked box. It's been set by my current landlord. I can't necessarily change what the settings are on that. Yeah. And it doesn't just feed, in this case, it doesn't necessarily just feed my current unit. It also is the control for all of the units in the building. So it's not even just me that I would have to consider in this case. It would be the other tenants that are also on the same platform, I guess. So, you know, people...
go ahead.
Sorry. People can sometimes have control over their heating system, like I have had previously, but not always. You know, the settings can be controlled by someone else too.
Yeah. And I think that's the communal aspect of renting that you don't realize until you're in there, that you're sharing all this space, complicates your what you're trying to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to that extent, when talking about the thermostat being locked up, I remember renting an apartment one time in an apartment building. And the bathroom, of course, was a tile floor in the bathroom. And in the wintertime, the floor would be so hot, you could not stand on it. So I would have to put down towels just to go into the bathroom because the floor was screaming hot. And I have this is in the middle of winter. I have the window open because that one room was so hot that you could barely be in it. And it's the complexity of an apartment building, right? With how do you manage that bigger building? But it's also, I think, to your point, is realizing that you do have some agency with some of the stuff and coming to terms. But it's also, as a renter, it's more, you're driven more by your own virtue, right? That you want to cut your carbon emissions so you may do these things. To the extent that you can see it reflected in a bill, that's the best incentive, right?
Yeah. And I will say that I think I've been considering things more along the lines of trying to get LED light bulbs, et cetera, prior to, I think, my experience with the windows. And you do, you know, save money, arguably, using LEDs as well as them being more energy efficient. But that tends to be smaller sense-wise. You know, it was harder to see that impact directly. I knew that I was making a difference in that choice. At every time I changed out an incandescent bulb for an LED that was more efficient. But mm-hmm. It was something like the windows was a much bigger difference, for sure.
I bet. So tell me this. I am in love with my induction hot plate. Is that something you have considered? I mean, you could probably buy one of those, you know, if you had, you know, an extra $150 floating around. Would that be a path as a renter that you would consider?
I've actually had, I don't know if it's luck, but every place I've lived so far has had electric stoves.
Okay.
But in a situation where it was a gas setup, absolutely, that could be something someone could consider, is be getting an induction cooktop. And I know that the Franklin Library has one, I believe, you can take home and try out if people wanted to do that. You do have to check to make sure you have the right kind of pans, but some pans already, you know, you might have at home could work with that. You might not have to go out and buy a whole new set, but that is something renters could do and have control over. I also tend to try and use sometimes smaller scale appliances. If I'm just cooking for me, for one, sometimes it's better to use the air fryer rather than heat up the entire oven, because it takes more energy. Even though it's an electric oven, it takes more energy to heat up a much bigger space. Whereas if I've got the air fryer and I'm just cooking, you know, I don't know, some potatoes for just me, that it takes less energy to heat up a smaller space, because it, you know, it can be more efficient with it. So, and I understand, obviously, like, getting all the different gadgets can take money in it to, if you want to go that route. I know I was fortunate enough to get my air fryer secondhand from a friend. I did not have to pay.
That's the best way to get things
for it.
Yeah.
You know, they had one that had come into their life that was better than what this one that they had. And they said, do you want it? And I said, absolutely. You know, but that's not necessarily, you know, not everyone might have that come into their life in the same way.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's tough to be a renter because, you know, you don't have you may not have the money to go out and buy a bunch of nifty things. Being in the rental, especially if the utilities are covered, there's no penalty for having a lot of emissions, and it's all driven by your sense of moral concern, right? Your concern about climate, which is a tough thing to maintain, right? And it's the financial incentive for the renter is the best thing, but it's hard. There's not much you can do. You're right. Even if you did buy a induction hot plate, it's not that big a change, right? I mean, because you don't cook as much as you heat your apartment. Well, I think that the question from the state side is, what can the state do about this mm-hmm. circumstance? But I don't know.
And I think that's a much more complicated question. And there are things, like I said, that are already in place. A lot of that does rely on your personal comfort level, right, of approaching your landlord about this. And right. It is something I have considered, especially because I am so active and aware of our pressing climate-related needs in Massachusetts and globally, truly. But at the same point in time, I understand why that is a daunting task for people. You know, it can seem like a big ask to ask your landlord to consider a big structural change. Or in my case, if you're moving around, it's hard to build up a rapport. You know, you might feel more comfortable if you have had the same landlord for a few years and you know each other a little bit more, or have had a chance to establish a relationship. But if you have a really big property management company that is, you know, the primary point of contact for you, that would be more daunting, surely. Or in my case, I think at this point, I am maybe going on my second or third landlord in less than 2 years span. So,
oh, really?
You know, sometimes that makes it a little bit more daunting as well. You don't want to rock the boat in a new situation. And I definitely respect that for tenants. And I understand in some ways the complications of being on the landlord side of it, right? Where you, if you have multiple tenants in a building, you might have to jump through certain hoops about having people there at certain times for different kinds of inspections or work if you're going to have to enter units. It's a lot more complicated, right?
Right.
I don't know if maybe there is a way for the state, whether it's through MassSave, to expand more in their outreach to landlords. I know that there are probably not business groups, but, you know, trade groups in some ways for landlords, groups, and maybe promotional activism from the state in that space might be useful, you know, so that they are either aware of the programs that are there and the potential benefit to them. You know, that might be a way to go about it. I'm sure there are more educated people than I on some of these things that have maybe some other ideas as well.
Yeah, I found masslandlords.net, which actually has exactly a discussion about, as a landlord, what do you want to do? I guess it's really interesting nugget. I mean, from a renter who wants to take action, right? Let's just posit someone like yourself, a renter who wants to decarbonize somehow. It's really very difficult because you can't challenge your landlord. They have all the cards, right? They have their own issues. I suppose what it's saying to me is that there's a systemic issue that has to be addressed by policy from outside the relationship between the renter and the landlord, right? There has to be some other actor, and that would be the state. And I suppose the best thing you can tell me, since you're a renter, I mean, it seems like the most impactful thing is to try and influence your congressperson or your state representative to get them, light a fire under them. And maybe I'm betraying myself, but I mean, renters are probably more transient than homeowners. And so the impact on a legislator may be less. The renters are really behind the eight ball, would you say? I mean, I don't know.
That seems to me to be a fair assumption in some ways. You might switch, like you said, districts or areas if you are moving around. I know most folks probably who are renting might try and stay within a certain radius of, say, maybe their job or family, or if they can.
Right.
But cost obviously plays a factor in that for many folks, and availability, certainly. I do think that it is, you do still have a voice with your legislator, even as a renter. It might be harder if you were moving around to similarly build a rapport, right? Because I think there is certainly a value in being someone who maybe reaches out to your legislator frequently and often with requests, concerns, if they get to know you and know that you're interested, I think you have the potential to have more sway than maybe a more casual email every once in a while, though that might be an easier route. But if they if you've got name recognition with your legislator, I think even if you are a tenant, I think that's still or a renter, someone who might not necessarily stay there for as long of a term, I still think that that could work to your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there is still some power in that.
I'm wondering if there's, so there is an omnibus bill going through the State House now. I know that, I'm just wondering, and I haven't done my research, but whether or not there's any sort of renter organizations that would lobby for the renter position, right? Because I'm sure it's not just clean energy for renters. I mean, there's a wide variety of issues that are at play there, right? Especially given the housing situation in Massachusetts in these times, right? Very, very tricky. But what I'm sort of trying to figure out is, what is the avenue for action for someone conscientiously wanting to do the right thing, but is in the circumstance of being a renter? And I think, like yourself, I mean, it's reaching out, knowing what's going on, at least being conscious of what your consumption patterns are, right? And thinking about where you have the ability to make some changes, right? And taking them. That's probably a good thing, right?
It is. And that did sort of get me thinking what you said about the renter organizations. There are definitely renter organizations at work in Massachusetts. I don't know if any of them have a sort of climate focus at the moment. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there is a group out there. I know that some of these omnibus bills have tried to include and incorporate elements that would help benefit renters in this space, but I cannot speak fully to necessarily these bills. They are omnibus bills. But that is something I would like to look more into, I think, to see if there are any renter organizations that are currently out there and active in that sort of environmental space.
Right.
Because I don't know the exact percentage for Massachusetts, but I know that a large number of people within the state are renters. You know, I don't know what the percentage is compared to homeowners, but
I think
competitive rental market, and it's a pretty big rental market.
Well, and everything matters. I think that's this, and I guess part of it is that there is money floating around, right? So why should all that money go to benefit the people who own homes? Right? I mean, that's sort of an inequity. And you say, some of that money should be, shall we say, forced upon the landlord to do the right thing. And that makes everyone's life better. But it's, again, I don't know.
And maybe that can come from the state. And maybe that could come from updated building codes, for towns. Because I think stuff like that would be the only thing that might help drive and have people be accountable. Ultimately, I think You said residences are about 30% of our overall building emissions for the state. And not all of those are single family homes.
Exactly.
Plenty of them are residential units. And eventually, if we're going to meet our state carbon goals, those are going to have to also have energy retrofits. And we are going to have to start having a lot more conversations about how do we make that happen? How do we have that either incentivized for the people who actually own those properties, or how do we, you know, is there more of a stick methodology, whether that comes through building codes or something, I don't know what
might
follow in that vein, but a penalty section, you know, like, is there some, which method is better? I don't know, but something is going to have to help drive that, because that's a part of that res building stock as well, is rental units.
I think up in Boston, there's something called BERDO. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, BERDO. I think it stands for Building Emissions Reduction. And I don't know what the DO stands for, but it's a system whereby the landlords are, so these are like for the big buildings downtown. They're not individual residences, right? So this is a different scale. We're away from, you know, people renting an apartment. This is downtown rental space, commercial rental space has to report the carbon emissions of their buildings, right? And then they get ranked on that. And that is at least the beginning of, you know, the measurement is the beginning of everything, right? And at that point, you can begin to question, how can you reduce that? And that may be a scheme that applies to more and more properties, in particular rental properties that are have to be reported out. I'm sure that will scale down from the biggest, like the commercial stuff downtown. Then you would talk about the big rental corporations, and the last people you would get to is the mom and pop who's renting the apartment in the in-law apartment in their home, kind of thing, right? So there's a lot of scales there, but got to start somewhere, huh?
I am familiar with a little bit with the BERDO, and I do think you're right. It is at this point focused on larger scale spaces, but I can see that pathway forward, like you said, that maybe eventually we will get to a point where we can do more analysis within our towns and within our communities and look at building stock, not just for, and energy usage and efficiency, not just for those super large spaces or commercial spaces or massive, you know, apartment complex, if those exist in your town or community, but start to scale it down as well. And then maybe have the facilities and resources to target those homeowners, those landlords, those, you know, and say, this is something that we would like to see change. What can we do to help you get there? You know, maybe that's eventually where we will be able to end up, my hope.
I saw something somewhere. So now this is all, I saw it on the internet, right? Which, you know what that means, but it's that the landlord is prevented. So suppose I'm a landlord, I do the right thing. I put in a heat pump, right? All of a sudden I'm going to turn around and charge, raise the rent, right? So there has to be some built-in thing to protect the renters from some period of time so that the cost doesn't necessarily get passed on, that the renter now has to bear the burden of the greening of things. And again, that's just something you would look at from a policy perspective, which
may or may not be very popular, depending upon where you fall within the system. But yes, I agree. Yeah. I think that would also be a concern too. I don't think my neighbors would be super happy if I pushed for a change that then led to everyone's rents being raised because of my functionally my request, right? Things couldn't necessarily go up, because obviously part of the entire being a landlord would be that you are in it for a business and you are eventually going to try and recoup those costs, but maybe preventing a large scale jump in the beginning, or developing better assistance models in the same way that I know that there are zero interest loans for certain things for homeowners for changes. So maybe that might make it easier, or rebates or incentives on, I don't know if there are any federal incentives for landlords, but you know, like there are things on not just a state level, but a larger scale level for homeowners. So maybe more components like that might make it easier to have a transition where it wouldn't have to mean, you know, a raise in your rent. And if we had other policy components to prevent that, that could also be a part of a system that might work together to help make this easier.
Wow. So this conversation has gone off into places I hadn't really, because it, what you're uncovering is essentially the issues of a market, right? Where the there's a lot of players. There's the landlord, there's the renter, there's the competition, there's other people in the house, there's the federal government. There's, it's a complex issue, isn't it? And as a renter, again, I keep coming back to the model of the conscious renter, the well-meaning renter, probably, you know, it's like, aside from the sort of, you know, improve your energy efficiency, which has been around for years, right, which people can and should do, it's mostly political, isn't it? I mean, the path for decarbonizing for renters is a political path.
I think, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, I do think that's very true about a lot of topics, but especially, you know, decarbonizing in a lot of ways. We've touched on a lot of systemic concerns. And I think for better or for worse, a lot of those changes have to sort of be political in order to make a large scale change to a system that is complicated and complex.
Well, I think you just put the cap on it. That's where we should, we can leave it there. I hope anyone who's listening to this who is a renter is not thoroughly depressed, but is energized by the idea that there is something to be done.
There are things to be done, and I don't want people to be disheartened. I do just want to acknowledge that it is obviously a difficult ask to potentially do. I encourage anyone who has the option, even as a renter, to get a mass save energy audit. It might not be the same sort of starting block that it is for homeowners necessarily, but it can help you get a sense of what possibilities there might be for you or for your landlord, depending upon the advice that's being offered in that audit. And in the very least, you come away knowing a little bit more about what your situation is. Mm-hmm. And if you can develop that into a conversation, wonderful. You know, it doesn't mean necessarily that anything might happen, but it would be a step forward. And I hope people who are renters consider that as well.
Well, that's great. You're from all you renters out there, please listen up. Well, we should put it down here. I think that we've got, if you have, dear listener, if you have any comments or questions about the show in general, things that we ought to be talking about, if you're a renter and want to come on the show and tell us your story, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we should be talking about. You're probably listening to this on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Although, Marissa, I just found out that Google Podcast is disappearing. And all Google Podcasts are going to go to YouTube now because Google bought YouTube. So I think that could fundamentally change podcasts into little videos, but we'll worry about that at another time. You can find the Climate Minute on Apple, Spotify, most of the modern distribution apps that are still podcast related, and the Google stuff is somehow moving over to YouTube. We'll figure that out in the course of time. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support, who sends us wonderful ideas every week. We want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of all that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector, especially as regards to rental units, over the next decade, under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investments, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Marissa, thank you for having this interesting conversation about what it's like being a renter.
Thank you for having me on. I enjoyed being able to talk to you about it.
That's great. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.